Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Drew Gladney, who's a professor of anthropology at Pomona College. Previously, he was president of the Pacific Basin Institute at Pomona, and prior to that was professor of Asian Studies at the University of Hawaii, as well as senior research fellow at the East-West Center. He's author of the award-winning book Muslim Chinese, Ethnic Nationalism in the People's Republic, as well as Ethnic Identity in China, the Making of a Muslim Minority Nationality, and Dislocating China, Muslims, Minorities, and Other Subaltern Subjects. Welcome to Background Briefing, Drew Gladney.
Thanks for having me.
And the Chinese Public Security Bureau have announced the arrest of five ethnic Uyghurs who are being described as Islamic jihadists responsible for this audacious attack at the foot of the Tiananmen Gate, which is near the political heart of the nation. What's your sense of obviously, we have to, you know, take some of these charges with some skepticism, given the rule of law in China or the lack thereof. But do you think this is a terrorist attack and this is something that might be a harbinger of more to come?
Well, if it is a terrorist attack, it's a very unusual one. Apparently, the driver was accompanied by his mother and his wife, and he's some kind of a delivery driver. The license plates were from Xinjiang. He's been identified as a Uyghur, so the immediate suspicion is it is connected to some sort of terrorism or separatism. But I think, again, it might be jumping to conclusions too quickly. The problem in China, of course, is once they've arrested a bunch of Uyghurs, they'll come out with some confessions and they'll close the case, and everybody will suspect that Uyghurs are always involved in terrorism. And I think that that could be very misleading in this case. It seems very idiosyncratic. It doesn't have the markings of a sort of jihadist suicide bomber with, you know, suicide vests or bombs in the car. The car exploded. On impact, they say there was gasoline in the car, but there's still a lot of questions left to be answered before anyone draws any conclusions.
Well, they've also said that in the car that Usman Hassan, his wife Gulzik Jini, and his mother Kawulhan Rehim, which are obviously Uyghur names, they died when it went up in flames. But they also have said that there were gas canisters and two knives, metal clubs, and a banner bearing religious extremism messages. Now, the police who have arrested these five Uyghur men at an undisclosed location on Monday say they've already confessed and they've discovered more long knives and a jihadist flag in this temporary residence where they were arrested. So again, I guess, you know, you just have to take all this with a grain of salt, right? We don't know whether it's real or what.
Right? Well, we do know an explosion took place.
Right.
We do know that Uyghurs were involved. The problem, of course, is that there's this sort of mass hysteria in China about Muslim jihadists and radical Islam and Uyghur separatism. And the media sort of fans the flames, and it's really hard to see through the smoke to actually find out what happens in these incidents. What's unusual about this, of course, is that often these incidents take place in the far west, in Xinjiang, and this is in the heart of China. And that's what makes people very worried. I would just call attention to the fact that even if the case that this guy was some sort of crazed person and he decided to do this, it's still a very low-level kind of attack with knives and a car on tourists. It's not obviously an example of a well-coordinated, internationally orchestrated separatist movement or radical Islamic movement. It's clearly the act of a very disturbed individual. The problem, of course, for China is that many Uyghurs are very upset about the government policy in the region, not just in China, but especially more vocal outside of China. And one suspects that these kinds of rather isolated and idiosyncratic incidents will continue unless something changes in China's policy in the western region of Xinjiang, where the Uyghurs live.
Again, I'm speaking with Drew Gladney, who's a professor of anthropology at Pomona College. Previously, he was president of the Pacific Basin Institute at Pomona, and prior to that was professor of Asian studies at the University of Hawaii, as well as senior research fellow at the East-West Center. He's the author of the award-winning book, Muslim Chinese Ethnic Nationalism in the People's Republic. And we're talking about this car that charged into crowds at Tiananmen Gate, killing two tourists, injuring 40 people. The people in the car died when it burst into flames. That was a husband, his wife, and his mother. However, five other people were arrested at an undisclosed location. It's unsure what connection they had to that. And in general, Drew Gladney, when you say that the Chinese people and the Chinese press are playing up Islamic terrorism, how does it compare here to the United States? Because we have a certain level of hysteria, and you know they're passing laws in Kansas and places like that to ban Sharia law when it's, nobody's even promoting it. I mean, so compare the paranoia in the U.S. and the paranoia in China vis-a-vis Islamic extremism.
Oh, of course, China has never had a 9/11 incident like we've had. And so it's not surprising that Americans often jump to conclusions when there's a major incident that looks like terrorism. But China has had a long history and series of uprisings and civil unrest in the region known as Xinjiang, the Uyghur autonomous region. And the government continues to portray these incidents as orchestrated from abroad, as inspired by radical Islam. People that look at this say that it looks a lot like civil unrest throughout China. The government admits that there's over 100,000 incidents a year now in China that are called mass incidents in the Chinese text that are related more to personal grievances, labor disputes, housing dislocation, and this kind of general sense that people have very little recourse but to do something crazy to get the government's attention. Recently, a man burned himself to death in his house instead of being moved, refusing to move, a kind of self-immolation, which we normally have seen among Tibetans. So, you know, these kinds of isolated incidents, when they're connected to a kind of larger plot conspiracy, I think it's a very counterproductive thing to do, because it then makes people even more suspicious. It divides the population, and the Uyghurs, who already feel marginalized and ostracized, will feel that even more.
So would there be a similarity between what the Uyghurs are feeling in the sense that in the way that the Tibetans are reacting to what many have referred to as a form of ethnic cleansing, where the Han Chinese are migrating at the encouragement of the government and at government expense, I imagine, into Tibet? And I believe that the Han Chinese are also migrating into Xinjiang, where most of China's ethnic Uyghurs are.
Yeah, I mean, the migration of Han into Xinjiang, the Uyghur autonomous region, is a much larger rate than in Tibet. Tibetans are still a majority population in their own autonomous region of Tibet. I think ethnic cleansing is a way too strong a term. Indeed, China, the communist government of China, has a very strong nationalities policy, and they celebrate ethnic diversity, and they try to protect languages and cultures and religions. A lot of these problems in the region are often the lack of oversight, the lack of carrying out these policies, which at times can be quite enlightened and progressive, particularly, you know, celebrating minority history and language and culture and even religion, protecting temples and mosques. You know, during the 1960s and 70s, there was this terrible period of the Cultural Revolution, and every Chinese regrets that period, and it's critical of the wide-scale crackdown on religion and on ethnicity. And if anything, you go to many temples and mosques in China, and they're full of worshipers. It's just in Xinjiang where we have this political issue, where the restrictions on religion are much more severe. And the Uyghurs feel like their culture and their religion is under attack and it is vulnerable to being overwhelmed by these large populations of Han migrants. You know, it's hard to tell what's going to happen in the future, but it's clear that this migration is going to continue. And the government needs to find some way to both, you know, advance the country and develop the country, but also protect the rights and the identities of the peoples that are in these regions, the local peoples.
Well, it seems, though, Drew Gladney, that those that study the Uyghurs and the ethnic minorities in China are concerned that this attack at the heart of the nation, if you will help bolster the contention on the part of the Chinese government that Uyghur Islamists have allied with a terrorist group known as the East Turkestan Islamic Movement. Give us a sense of you've just pointed out that the Chinese government have been very careful to nurture minorities and address their cultural needs. But who is this East Turkestan Islamic Movement, and do you think that that the authorities are going to make life difficult for Uyghurs who are not necessarily Islamists but are calling for better conditions for their minority?
I think it's really misleading to link every isolated incident among the Uyghurs or among Muslims in China to this shadowy organization, which may not even exist anymore. It was a very shadowy organization whose origins are rather murky. There's no identifiable members today, no headquarters. No one knows where it's based. And it did receive much attention just after 9/11, when it was identified as an international terrorist network. Some people are very suspicious that played into the hands of those who wanted to suggest that there was an international terrorist organization operating in China. The evidence of that is very specious when we look at the small scale nature and the lack of a sort of jihadist signature in any of these incidents. We're talking about knives, in this case, a car. In Xinjiang, we've seen larger scale incidents, but generally these take the form of riots, the largest of which was in 2009 on July 5th, when Uyghurs were very upset about the mistreatment of Uyghur workers in southern China. But this spilled into the streets, and I think people were shocked at the level of intensity of anger among the Uyghur population towards the Han, and the kind of building up of resentment. And it had nothing to do with Islam. It had nothing to do with independence. It had nothing to do with jihad or separatism. It was about a labor issue. It was about a mistreatment of social rights issue. So what's been happening in China since 2009 is a kind of rethinking of the whole policy towards Western Xinjiang, Western China's development. But there really hasn't been any change in policy, and these incidents keep happening again and again on a small scale and on a large scale. So it's clear that the government has to rethink this policy and make some changes on the ground if they're going to avoid these kinds of incidents in the future.
Well, the United States, of course, designated this murky, perhaps non-existent group, East Turkestan Islamic Movement, as a terrorist organization. I don't know whether we created the China's nemesis here, but
we certainly supported it.
This is exactly. Well, I thank you so much for joining us, Drew Gladney.
Yeah, you're very welcome.
Again, I've been speaking with Drew Gladney, who's a professor of anthropology at Pomona College. Previously, he was president of the Pacific Basin Institute at Pomona, and prior to that was professor of Asian Studies at the University of Hawaii, as well as senior research fellow at the East-West Center. He's the author of the award-winning book, Muslim Chinese Ethnic Nationalism in the People's Republic. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program's available for podcasting at ianmasters.com, where you can also contact me. Bye for now.
down in America.